it's not all about being sober. It's about learning ways a lot, like a new way of life. It's about new relationships with family, with friends. It's not just about staying sober and getting off the drugs. It's way more to that. And I would suggest, like I said, if anybody's thinking about it, to just go for it, because it could be a life-changing experiment for a lot of people.
You're listening to Real Recovery Talk with your host, Tom Conrad. Every day, Tom helps guide people like you who have loved ones dealing with addiction. You're most likely frustrated with the situation, worried your loved one won't get better, and concerned you're not doing enough to help. This show will help you understand the tremendous struggle of addiction from your loved one's perspective. You'll hear stories of recovery, which will give you hope, and you'll understand the limits to what you can and can't do to help those you love. Tom is a certified addictions counselor who's successfully winning his own battle with drug addiction and alcoholism, and has helped many others win theirs as well. It's time now for Real Recovery Talk.
Here we are, Real Recovery Talk. I am your host, Tom Conrad. I kind of like that intro. It's like the UFC introductions when they're introducing the fighters. What do you think, Ben?
Go ahead, introduce me.
And now, speaking out of the left couch cushion. Oh, anyways, we're just having some fun. This is, I'm Tom. I'm your host of Real Recovery Talk. In today's episode, we have Benjamin B.
What's up, everybody? Oh, I thought my intro came already. Tom introduced me, but hey, yeah, I'm here.
Ben's here, and we also have a guest. Our guest today, her name is Kat.
Hello, I'm here.
All right. First things first, go to realrecoverytalk.com. There you will find every single episode that we have ever recorded. It's everything addiction, drug addiction, alcoholism, sex addiction, food addiction, shopping addiction, powerlifting addiction, you name it, it is there. Addiction is addiction. And we cover it all. Basically anything that, if you have any questions about yourself or a loved one, you will find answers inside those episodes. Go to realrecoverytalk.com, scan the titles of the episodes and see what resonates with you. And in the end, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can always reach out to myself at tom@realrecoverytalk.com and
Ben@realrecoverytalk.com.
All right, here we go. All right, Kat is gracious enough to come onto the show and share some of her experience, strength, and hope with all of you. And she has a pretty cool story. I'm fortunate enough to have seen Kat go through this process from beginning up until now. And so we asked her to come on to share some of the things that she has gone through. And I think what you'll gain out of this episode is, one, of course, is hope that if Kat can do it, anybody can do it. And two, a good aspect of what treatment is actually like, because Kat is somebody that is with us here at Rock Recovery right now. And she's okay with sharing, you know, what's going on with her in the treatment realm. And, she did have one treatment experience before. So we are going to discuss that and the differences and, how her mindset has changed, from then until now. So without further ado, Kat, I just want you to share a little bit about yourself, how old you are, what your addiction, where it started, how it started, just the basics to give the listeners more of an understanding about what makes up you as a drug addict.
Okay, so I'm Kat. I'm 32 Saturday. I'm from Louisiana, so I've been around drugs now and doing drugs since I was 15. So I don't know how many years that is, but that's a lot. My drug of choice obviously was heroin, but I've done all of them. I've been through 10 detox centers and I've been through 2 treatments. This is my second treatment. So I've been doing drugs for a long time, and a lot of my drug using was with family members and a lot of friends that I thought were friends, but they're not.
So let's pause there. Let's just stick on the you said you've been to 10 treatment or 10 detoxes and two treatment centers, us being the second one.
Correct.
And a lot of your drug use you said you started or were using drugs with a lot of your family members. Elaborate on that a little bit.
Like, I did a lot of drugs with my mom.
Okay.
And I've done drugs with my little sister.
So is it something that has been normalized within your family, would you say?
Yeah and no. A lot of family doesn't know the full extent of my using, especially with my mom. Mm-hmm. We kind of kept that hidden. But yeah, I guess you could say that.
So how would your mom feel today, knowing the position that you're in treatment for the second time, you're trying to get, you know, your life back on track? I mean, I've had some conversations with your mom and it feels like, or at least it appears as if she's pretty supportive of you at this stage and she wants to see you do well. What do you feel like would be her take on you getting help today?
Oh, she's 100% for it. She's one of my main support systems. And like, she's just helped me every way she can through this.
And have you guys discussed at all about your relationship in the past and how it's, you know, really a lot of your drug use was kind of fueled, not by her, but she partook in it just as much as you did?
She was definitely a huge enabler, but she's still in denial. Like, my drug use is more serious than hers. Like, she'll still tell everybody she's not using, but we know she is. But she leaves herself out of it when it comes to me. Like, she doesn't talk about what she does or anything. She just wants to know, like, if I'm okay and if I'm getting through this. That's all she really wants.
Okay. Well, that could be a good thing, really. I mean, it's, she's removing herself from you and you trying to better yourself, which could be a good thing for you, you know?
Right.
Because if she's toxic for you, then maybe it's not a good thing that she's involved in you trying to better yourself.
Right. That's another thing. We were actually going to be doing some family sessions with my mom, but with my sister and my counselor and me, we decided that we're just going to leave her out of it for right now because my siblings have said how it's not fair that I'm going to treatment trying to better myself and do right by like my kids and stuff, and my mom's not. So they've kind of backed off of her too.
Ben, what do you have on that? I think it's something that when you said it's not fair that you're bettering yourself and your mom isn't, that to me sounds a little like you're afforded this opportunity that mom should have too. And I think just from hearing that, the perspective that I think should be taken is you're choosing to better yourself. It's not what's fair and what's not fair. You are choosing to do everything to better yourself. And if your mom chooses to not do that, it's not a matter of whose fault it is. That's on your mom. Ben, what do you have on that?
Family dynamics can be looked at as very complicated oftentimes, but the reality of the situation, while the solution is actually simple, it can be very hard emotionally. So I'm with Tom and where he was going with that direction where, you know, at the end of the day, when it comes to adults that are able to think for themselves, you know, children, adolescents, you know, teens, it's a little bit different, you know, due to maturity level. But, you know, each individual is responsible for their own accountability and wellness and doing for themselves. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm always proponent for, like, especially when it comes to families, if I use, for instance, a married couple that are both in active addiction, I think that's a really easy example. You know, I'm always an advocate for them separating. Each one works on themselves, becomes their own person, and then they can be more helpful to the family dynamic, mostly by being a good example and showing others like, hey, family member, this is the path that I took, you know. And it's the same in any dynamic situation, mother, daughter, you know, sister, etc. But each individual has to be responsible for their own recovery, take the opportunities presented before them, and play a part in that. You know, when we try to intermix and intermingle all these
wise, and it must have been this, and people start assuming motives, and it gets really cloudy, you know. And I think the most clear cut is to focus on yourself, get better, and in that aspect, you know, there's you're able to go back and teach, and mostly I already said it, lead by example. Like, here's what I'm doing, here's what I've done for myself, and it's each person, it's like the building blocks of a family, you know? One block at a time gets better sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's important, too, to recognize that you can't fix your mom. You know, there's nothing that you can do other than what Ben just said, lead by example, and hopefully she sees the improvements that you have made and, you know, what you have got going for yourself, and maybe she decides that she wants that, too. But without staying harping on that and your mom, I will say that she has, at least from my perspective, she has done everything in her power to get you the help that you wanted and needed. And, you know, that goes a long way with me. And so let's move past your, go ahead, Ben, you had something to say.
Yeah. I think just through some of the conversations I've had with Kat, there's, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, Kat, there's been some revelations on your part where, you know, we had discussions where you were struggling with some of this stuff that you brought to my attention. And, you know, kind of when you look at it from a different perspective, there was one instance in particular where you literally said to me, well, if I was my mom, I'd be doing the same exact thing and be given the same exact suggestions. And I think it's just always important to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. Like, mom is looking out for you and for you to... Do you have anything before I continue to elaborate?
No, I agree with that. I completely forgot that I did reach out to you on that. And when you put it into a certain, like, you gave me, what was that called? Like,
Perspective,
yeah. It really definitely, to me, sounded like it made a lot of sense. Like, if I would have put myself in my mom's shoes, I would most definitely, yeah, feel the same way.
So you've been to 10 detox centers and 2 treatment centers. What was it? When did you go to your first detox center?
When I went to my first treatment center.
Which was when?
Back in 2012.
So from 2012 to 2020, you've done 10 detoxes. What happened? Like, what? How do you find yourself in 10 different detox centers and you just don't get clean? Go ahead.
Well, it was the same detox center. Like, the first detox was this time I went to the treatment center for 28 days, but other, like, between then and now, I actually have been to the same detox, and I think it was just because I was so comfortable with going there. We would only, like, they would only keep us there 9 to 11 days, and, you know, that's really not enough time for somebody who's trying to come off of drugs or, like, my drug and go home and stay clean when it's just a detox.
Let me ask this, was there an option for actual treatment afterwards? Because one of the things that I see very often, you know, Tom and I will assist someone in getting into a detox facility, which takes care of just the medical, the physical side of this thing. And as soon as they feel better through the withdrawals or whatever the case may be, you know, then they're like, oh, I feel better. I don't need treatment. I got this. Was there an option for you to do treatment, or?
The options were IOP. Intensive outpatient. And I mean, I would agree to it, but then I never followed through with it. So, like, when I would get out of honestly, like, there's been 3 times I've gone to detox, and the day I got released, I ended up in the emergency room because I was still detoxing. I was still sick. So it wasn't like, it was mostly just, oh, well, you know, you're done with your detox, stay here, have a nice life.
Now, do you feel like, looking back on those detox attempts, were you in a position each time that you wanted to get clean, or was it more, I'm at the end of my rope, I run out of money or whatever, my back's up against the wall, may as well go into detox?
It was mostly I was homeless and didn't have anywhere to go, and I was out of money, and just that was an easy, I really didn't want to get clean because I was thinking about getting out to get high.
And I think that's an important thing to stay on just for a minute because, you know, again, it's mindset. It's mindset. And we as addicts, we need to have that mindset shift, which we're going to get to with you. But for people, listeners, maybe it's you or maybe it's your loved one. They've been to numerous treatment centers. And you're thinking to yourself either, why can't I get sober, or why can't my loved one get sober? Just go, you know, they go to treatment. What's the problem? A lot of it has to do with the mindset. Am I in treatment because I truly want to be in treatment, or am I in treatment because I'm forced in? Now, I say that very lightheartedly because Ben and I, we always say when we get people into treatment, normally it's not, you know, what they're not coming in cheering and jumping for joy that they're going into treatment. 99% of the time, people enter into treatment and they don't want to be there. But there has to be, in the very beginning stages, I would argue probably in the first 72 hours, we're looking for some sort of mental shift as to why they buy into the idea, I need to be here. And a lot of times, if we can make that happen, then they're going to stay in treatment for the long term. Now, that isn't with everybody. If they don't buy into the idea that they need to be in treatment, then the chances of them being successful are slim to none, if ever at all. So I think that's why, you know, you have all these detox attempts when in reality, you just even didn't want to be there. And that mindset shift never even happened for you. Go ahead, Ben.
I just want to reiterate that Tom said lightheartedly, because a lot of times part of the treatment process is the stages of change. You know, people will get to us, for instance, and 2 weeks in realize they get a taste of what this can be about. And then they buy in, you know, they don't come in here absolutely willing. Our good buddy, Josh Gam always says, how can you crave a strawberry if you've never tasted a strawberry? Like, how can you crave sobriety if you've never tasted sobriety and get an idea of what it's all about? And so many people have these preconceived notions of what the treatment process is going to look like, either because they've been to a previous place or they had this idea in their head based off of what they see on TV or movies. Like, but they actually find out once they're in this process, like, how awesome it can be. So I just kind of wanted to throw that out there.
So I think that's a good transition into, let's now discuss, when was the mindset shift for you? What was it that you kind of were like, okay, I'm going to, Florida now, because here you are. What was that like for you?
It was honestly very scary at first, but like, I didn't want to come. I agreed to coming just to make family members happy. And I wasn't ready just yet, but when I ended up like hitting rock bottom and going to jail is whenever I really started thinking hard about it.
So let's discuss that for a minute. Like, what was it? Let's go 72 hours prior to entering into detox. What did that look like for you? The 3 days before you going into treatment, what did that look like for you?
I got arrested and it was just chaotic. It was a mess. Especially during quarantine when, like, I went to jail, I had to be, you know, in this nasty cell for 48 hours and I had a lot of time to, like, think about it. I begged my mom to get me out so I can go to treatment, because that was definitely God's, you know, way of telling me, like, you're either about to die or you're going to do a lot of jail time. So you need to make a choice.
So your mom agreed to bail you out?
She agreed to bail me out, but the agreement was if she bailed me out, I had to go straight to her house to get on a plane.
And you did that?
I did that.
And so now you fly to Florida.
Yes.
You enter into detox.
Yes.
What's your mindset like then?
I accepted it. I was very, I accepted it. I was actually really happy that I was there. I was so sick for the first 16 days. It was miserable. It was me like telling myself I'll never want to go through this again, but I did it. I mean, it was scary at first, but I like just, my mom even said like the way I looked was, oh, I've done this before. It's no big deal. But I was just to the point I really wanted to get here, like, and just get it over with, because I was excited for the next step.
Do you feel like you had that mindset shift that we were just talking about?
I got the mindset shift, I think, when I got on the plane to come down here to Florida.
Explain that a little bit.
Like, I had a couple of flights before I got here. So, like, I had a lot of time to think about what I'm going to do, what my life's going to be like. You know, like, I actually left the state of Louisiana to come to Florida. I've never even imagined to do that before. And now that, like, I got down here, it was just, I don't know, the mindset. Like, I get my kids back. I'll get my family back. I'll get everything I want back if I just put my mind to it and do it.
It's amazing.
It gets exhausting.
What does?
Running, like, using, going from pillar to post, you know, like, different people, like, just being around different people who are either about to go to jail or they're overdosing. Like, you get tired of seeing all that.
I think that Kat's story in particular, this is a really good example. You know, we were talking about the stages of change, and she just told us how on the airplane she had a switch of mindset. Just for the listeners out there, you know, because we have a lot of these situations. Kat was one. I was sitting in the same room. I didn't actually take the phone calls, but I would like to hear Tom tell everybody, like, in a short version, like, how difficult it was to get Kat to commit, and some of the dishonesty with, oh, I haven't drank in X amount of days, and then somebody else. That way it gives people an idea of, you know, what that looks like to, it was really challenging getting here to, now we have someone sitting with us that's literally done just about everything we've ever asked of her, with a couple hiccups that are to be expected in the treatment process, nothing out of the norm. But why don't you fill them in on that, Tom, from your perspective?
Yeah, so I have one rule of thumb generally, and it's when I'm talking to a drug addict, they're generally lying, probably 99.9% of the time. And it's just a reality of it. I mean, it's the nature of the beast, and I speak from experience. But with that being said, Kat was somebody, the first phone call that I ever got in regards to Kat was from her mom. And it was, and I could hear it in mom's voice that, like, she didn't know what to do. She was, well, I don't want to say she didn't know what to do, because she actually sounded like she knew what she was going to do, but just needed somebody and needed to figure out, okay, what are the resources that I'm going to be able to present to Kat? And I think that's where I came in and helped her kind of navigate that. But she had already known about the boundaries and stuff that were set in place and kind of filled me in on a lot of Kat's situation. But there was a lot of denial, a lot of mischievous, like, Kat was, you know, like you just said, homeless. And, you know, there was I believe your mom was 2 hours away from you. And so it was a lot of, like, hearsay and stuff. And if I remember correctly, you didn't have a phone, but you were using other people's phones or something. But Kat, the point being is, Kat this whole entire time was maintaining this lie that she had been clean for, she could, well, and here's how I knew she was lying. She gave like three different dates in which she got clean. And they, and so she didn't know, like, and that's the thing. And it's like, we can laugh on it now, but that's the nature of this, is she didn't know what lie to say to cover up the last lie to cover up the last lie. And so that was kind of like the, you know, everything that happened with Kat. It was just lie after lie. And then finally, you know, thank God she got arrested, you know, and I say thank God, like, literally thanking God you got arrested, because to me, that's a divine intervention. And that's something that a lot of people need to finally, like, for you had that, okay, I'm arrested, I'm in jail, I need out of here, like, I'm willing to go to treatment. And that's what happens for a lot of people. And I think that was one of the biggest turning points for you. But, you know, the manipulating and everything, it held true with you, and it holds true with just about everybody coming in. And that's why, you know, from Ben and I's perspective, we'll never, ever give up on people. That's our job. I've had conversations with families and loved ones, and they're like, at what point in time do you throw in the towel on these people? And the answer is, we don't, you know, because it takes what it takes. And, you know, I talk to people from that I've had first conversation with over a year ago, and still reaching out to them, because at some point in time, unless they die, the other shoe is going to drop. And it's, you know, we have to be there to help facilitate that. But in the end, you know, for Kat, it obviously worked out well. So you're here now. How much clean time do you have?
It will be 60 days Friday.
60 days Friday.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So could you take yourself back? You're sitting in the jail cell. Could you even imagine having 60 days clean and sober?
No, not at all.
And if you could imagine it, has it lived up to your expectations or more?
It's actually lived up more.
In what ways?
Like, it's a completely different way of life. And it's not like, now I get to wake up without having to rely on a drug to get me out of bed. Like, I don't have to continue the lies after the lies just to, so I can, like, I don't have to continuously dig myself a hole, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, having that continuously trying to, I know for myself, and Ben, you could probably say the same, my drug addiction and my alcoholism turned into a second full-time job.
Right.
You know, exactly. I had my full-time job, and then I had my full-time job of maintaining my addiction, which was, it was a lot harder for me than my actual full-time job, you know?
Yes, it was harder. I would definitely say harder. That kind of segues too into, you know, you had touched on previously being in a 30-day facility where you were kind of locked down and then released out, and being down here, kind of a different format of a program you were touching on earlier, not on the podcast, but previous to us starting to hit record, on some of the benefits to, you know, you've been in a program now for 60 days versus 30 locked in four walls. What are some of the benefits you've seen at, like, the format that's different here?
Oh, it's totally different. When I was in the treatment center back in 2012, it was like we couldn't even hold on to our own shampoo. You know, we couldn't hold on to any of our belongings. Like, we couldn't go to our rooms. We couldn't do anything. And it was actually very miserable compared to now. We actually live in a house and we get to go do fun things, you know, and come in a group, and the facilitators here are awesome. Like, they really break stuff down for you to be able to understand really what recovery is. And it was just, the 30-day treatment center was, you do 28 to 30 days, and then it's goodbye. Here, they actually, like, you actually do some time here in treatment, but they never just tell you goodbye. They are always still there.
You get to, like, try things sober here?
Yeah, we definitely get to do a lot of different things over here.
Like earlier, you touched on outside meetings, building a community, all that stuff. I like to throw it out there because we see this a lot, and I'm a huge proponent and advocate. You know, Tom and I get these phone calls all the time from parents. Well, what do you mean they can have their cell phone? What do you mean they go to the grocery store? You take them to the grocery. What do you mean? You take them out on adventures, like, They're going to use, you know. And the reality of the situation, Kat just kind of nailed it. You lock somebody in four walls, we say it all the time, don't let them do anything by themselves. Basically, all you're doing is kind of, in a prison-type way, keeping somebody from using and not even giving them the opportunity to use, and then you expect them to succeed when they get out. Like, I'm such a proponent for, you know, and I tell loved ones this, yes, that, you know, it's controlled, it's a controlled environment, but we want them to have slight situations of triggers and oh, I saw this, we drove by a liquor store. Good. You got to see a liquor store. How'd that feel? Because if you weren't with us and you were released after a 30-day program and it's your first time driving by a liquor store, you're probably going to end up going and checking out the liquor store a little closer versus driving by it with a behavioral health tech, for instance.
Yeah, definitely. The 30-day program was really difficult because you don't get to see outside at all. You don't go outside. We didn't go outside at all, honestly. We didn't even go play basketball. We didn't get to go just take a walk outside. We didn't get to do any of that stuff. And now we get to go to the grocery store. Like, we get independence here, but we still have structure.
There's no rehabilitation going on in places like that. And that's just the reality of it. Now, with that being said, there are a detox residential type facility. Yes, they are 24/7 lockdown, but that's a short amount of time and there's the aftercare component. So, you know, there is good things and some people need that. The reality of it is some True. People need to be in a position to where they have to be told where to be, when to be, why to be, you know, like everything needs to be done for them. And if that's the type of person that they are, a lot of times they're not a good fit here because, you know, they need that structure in their life. They're, I would argue, maybe institutionalized at that point. But if somebody does get that kind of structure, because we do get people here with 30 days clean and sober in their first 30 days, they were in a facility like that everything was done for them. And now they get here. Okay. This is more the meat and potatoes. You're going to have you're going to have a lot of structure, but you're also going to be given your freedoms and we're going to provide you accountability, but you also have to hold yourself accountable. And so that's kind of the transition of this whole entire treatment thing. So to go into a place for 28 days and just go right back out onto the streets and there's no transition, I 100% of the time, I can't say 100, I'll say 99.9% of the time, it ends in relapse. And it's not really fair to the addict who's having to be put in this position.
I think it's important, you know, maybe I should clarify the importance of the entire continuum of care. Ideally, what we like to see, and I'll use the Florida terminologies, maybe it's a little different other places, but detox residential, generally people are running 3 weeks in those settings where they are locked down, which I'm 100% with Tom on that one, is very often necessity. But then stepping down to what we call a PHP, which is like kind of a more loose inpatient, but you still get to go outside some. You get, you know, rather than going to a cafeteria like in detox residential, you know, you actually get taken to a grocery store under supervision, you know, and you shop for yourself. And Kat touched on independence, but then intensive outpatient, you know, that's still providing a housing situation, you know, where the outside stimulus, the outside trigger is there a little bit more, you know, that whole continuum of care is so important. And I think that's where so many places fall short, is all they offer is the first 30 days, the detox, the residential, and then good luck. I hate seeing that. And I'm a firm believer that's a big reason that, you know, a lot of places have such low success rates, because they don't see it through beginning all the way to the end. You know, you're not giving a drug addict a chance, you know, in my opinion. So I just feel like it's really important to recognize jumping into the deep end of the pool, going that whole continuum of care.
So I want to take just the last few minutes and discuss, you've had a couple of procedures done. And the reason I want to discuss this is because it's important. You had some medical procedures done while in these 60 days of being clean and sober. Take a minute, discuss how that went, what your mindset was going into it, and how it ended up.
Well, I had stated earlier that I had been sick for 16 days. So they wanted to put me to sleep and put a scope down my throat into my stomach, because I wasn't holding food down at all. I had lost so much weight. So I was a little nervous going in, because I've never not had pain medicine before with a procedure. But going in, like, I made sure to just tell them up front. They said, "Do you have any allergies?" And I said, "No narcotics at all." And so it was a little scary, like, oh no, am I going to be like hurting real bad after this and not have no pain medicine? But it actually went really well. I didn't need any pain medicine for that. Then I had my mouth surgery and I had stitches in my mouth, and I made sure to tell them no narcotics. And it was difficult going through all that without pain medicine, because, you know, a mouth ache like is really difficult to deal with. Like, it affects your mood, it affects the way you're, like, it affects everything about your day, honestly. But I went through it without anything. I think I took ibuprofen, but I still came to groups. You know, like, the procedures were difficult. It was definitely exhausting and scary, because it just felt like it was back to back. I'm about to have another mouth surgery, you know. And honestly, I never had stitches in my mouth before. So this was all just new to me. But going in with the mindset of like no pain medicine, it's a little scary, but it's actually like makes me feel like so good because I was able to do it.
I love that you're sharing on this and that this was brought up, because the idea that, you know, a lot of the times people get sober, they come to treatment, and during that process, then all of a sudden we start addressing all these medical issues that we had. We were ignoring them because we were in active addiction. And a lot of times, you know, this is part of the treatment process. We have to take care of physical needs almost immediately in many cases. You know, and in your case, the willingness that you had, like I wanted to touch on and give you credit as well. You know, you mentioned you continue to go to groups and stuff. We actually told Kat, like, hey, we want you to stay in bed and rest. And she's like, no, I'm coming to group.
Right.
And like literally couldn't talk her out of it. She still wanted to participate, which also goes to show, because we have clients in here, you know, and I believe it's a part of their addiction. They're a couple weeks into treatment and they have to have the same exact thing done, some sort of oral surgery, dental work, whatever the case is. And they basically come to us and present, hey, I'm going to let you know that I'm having this procedure done and I'm going to be taking pain pills. And they don't even know whether or not they're truly, truly, truly going to need them. And here's a perfect example and evidence that Kat made it through. And I don't think, you know, you could correct me if I'm wrong, that it was like too bad.
No, it wasn't bad. It wasn't too bad. It was painful, but it was nothing more than like feeling like I just had a migraine, and you can treat a migraine with Tylenol.
Yeah, like a good old drug addict, you know, we stub our toe and we're like, I need an 80 milligram Oxycontin. Yeah. Please. Like, you know, and that's what we're dealing with, you know, that this, and I think it's more the mental side of it. This idea, like I have a justification to take this pain pill, you know, and, most of the time our clients, they end up going through this process, and don't get me wrong, there's exceptions to the rule. Like we've had people go in for, you know, major surgeries, to be honest with you, because we discover that there's something wrong in the treatment process and like they have to stay in the hospital for a few days and they are given narcotics, you know, through an IV line, you know, it is what it is, but we're able to bring people through that too, you know. And I can share for myself, I was just in the hospital what, 2 weeks ago, and I'm sitting there thinking, you know, it's funny because I was reflecting back, like I used to, like there's been times where I've like literally cut my own gums to like pretending like I hit my face and go to the ER and be like, I need pain pills. Like, and now I'm going to the hospital. I'm there for over 24 hours, stayed overnight, and I'm like not even thinking about getting pain pills. You know, when I would, if had I been sitting in the hospital in active addiction, all I'm thinking about is, okay, how can I get some pain pills? When's the nurse bringing them? How can I get them? What can I tell them to get them? That was stressful in itself.
Yeah, you definitely have to have support system. And it's a lot easier to get through that stuff with the support. And everybody here was very supportive. I mean, yeah, I chose to go to groups and stuff, but even the clients were very supportive. And when you have the support, I think it, like, you put it in your mind, like, with the support, like, you can get through with, like, through this. Not a lot of people can do it on their own.
You said even the clients. Let me ask you something. In your perspective, just out of curiosity, I have no idea what your answer is going to be. How important has, like, the clients themselves, the community here, been to you?
Very important. They're mostly what makes our recovery. They, like you're opening your deepest, darkest secrets to these, you know, clients during groups and outside meetings and stuff. And, it's just very, the clients to me are very important because that's really like that's who we live with. That's who we, you know, we're sharing every day here with, you know, so it's very important.
The community aspect is very important for people when they're in treatment, and that's what we try and do the best of, is provide a supportive community for all of you. So we're running out of time. We just want to take the last couple minutes and talk about you and the progress that you've made. And at least from my perspective, the person that I talked to on the phone prior to coming here to the person I see today, it's comparing apples to oranges. And, you know, it's really, it helps me understand why we do this, why we record the podcast, why we provide and do treatment. Cause I mean, this is a stressful job for us and for Ben and I. And, you know, there's a lot to it, a lot of moving parts, a lot of people that, you know, we deal with death. You know, we hear people about overdosing and dying that we've tried helping in the past, you know, families and stuff destroyed from addiction and stuff. But with that being said, every time we get an opportunity to record a podcast like this with you and see the transformation that happens literally from you're out in the streets using till today gives us the fuel to keep going. And I will tell you this, you've done absolutely everything that we've expected of you. You are what Ben would say, getting pretty dang close to straight A's in treatment, which is a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing. And when we do these podcasts, we like to give you an opportunity or give you something. You're doing phenomenal, but we always want to leave you with something to work on and to be mindful of. It's okay to not be okay all the time. And for you, one of the biggest things that I see with you is a lot of times it's rainbows and red. Wait, what's it called?
Rainbows and Red Bull.
Rainbows and Red Bull for you. You know, it's everything's good. You know, it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to just not be okay. That would be what I would tell you. That would be my recommendation. But outside of that, you're doing awesome. And it's been a pleasure seeing you grow and, you know, obviously seeing what is going to happen for you in the future. Ben, go.
It's funny you went that direction because that's one last thing I wanted to touch on with Kat. You know, her and I, maybe a week ago, maybe half a week ago, had a phone conversation. It was pretty later at night, like 10 o'clock at night. You know, she was feeling some sort of way and called my cell phone. But basically speaking, you know, there was some dishonesty going on with what she was telling me and telling the treatment team. And I just like to leave her with something. And I think she already gained this. But like we had a situation where, you know, through her dishonesty, I was like, well, why were you dishonest about that? Because I just confronted her on a couple of things. Well, I thought you all would be upset with me was kind of her answer. There was more to it than that. But like the bottom line is she thought that we'd be mad at her, disappointed. But at the end of the day, like, you know, and I hope Kat knows this, and I hope that every single client that walks through the door knows this. We want to know the truth because that's what's going to help us. That's what's going to help us help you. It's what's going to help you. The honesty, like, we don't have to pretend anymore. A huge part of this process is finding out, you know, where we're falling short and being honest about it, you know, and I believe Kat fully knows now, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, you know, that there's a level of trust between us where, and our treatment team therapist, where she can tell us the truth and know that it's where we don't judge. In my case, for instance, like I'm going to give feedback probably based off the same thing because I've done it before. Like somebody had to give me the feedback. You know, it's the pot calling the kettle black kind of thing.
Right.
It's through my own experiences I could say, hey, don't worry about it. And I hope now you know that you can always be honest and we're not going to judge you. We need to know the truth about everything because that's the only way we can give you suggestions. If we only have half truths or not truths, then we're giving suggestions based off of the information that we have, which is not accurate. You know what I mean?
Right. That's like lately I was walking around here acting like everything was perfect until I'd opened up to you and Ashley and Tom a little bit. Like I can't keep walking around like saying, no, I'm perfectly fine because I'm not. There's been several times that I've had to actually like share in a group, like something's really bothering me. You know, I'll walk around with a smile, but it's also very stressful going through this process. So, it's nice being honest because now knowing, you know, that I could come to y'all and tell y'all anything, it makes it so much better. Like it's a difference besides using, like you don't have to keep lying over, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
All right. So the last thing is I want you to just take 30 seconds and tell a parent, a loved one, or even another one of you that is out there, just a couple of things that you would recommend. What maybe they're looking to get some help. You know, what are some of the top things that you could tell them to do?
I would tell them, if they're even thinking about doing treatment, to just go for it, because there's so much. It's not all about being sober. It's about learning ways of life, like a new way of life. It's about new relationships with family, with friends. It's not just about staying sober and getting off the drugs. It's way more to that. And I would suggest, like I said, if anybody's thinking about it, to just go for it, because if it could be, it could be a life-changing experiment for a lot of people.
Perfect. All right. That is it for this episode of Real Recovery Talk. Thank you for tuning in. And Kat, thank you for sharing your story. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns about yourself or a loved one, don't forget to reach out to myself at tom@realrecoverytalk.com and
ben@realrecoverytalk.com.
That is it. We will see y'all later.
You've been listening to Real Recovery Talk with Tom Conrad. If you'd like to have a confidential conversation about your specific situation, give Tom a call on his direct line at 561-220-7163. Or if you'd prefer, you can chat with Tom live at realrecoverytalk.com. As always, if this show is a benefit to you, please give it a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or wherever you discover your favorite podcasts. Thank you for being part of our mission to bring hope and healing to our loved ones struggling with addiction, as well as wisdom and comfort to those of us around them.